Welcome to the Wrecking Yard. I'm Jerry Wayne Longmire, and y'all are presumably still y'all. All are welcome here in the Church of Internal Combustion. We just ask that you show up with an open heart. Oh, I just got back from the gym. It's actually Sunday morning I'm recording this, which is very unusual for me, but I didn't feel like being on camera yesterday. And I don't know, nothing bad happened. It wasn't anything. Some days you just don't feel like being in front of a camera. Yesterday was one of those days. And should have filmed it Friday, but I was too busy having fun Friday. So I didn't. I stayed up gaming kind of late. Anyways, we're here now, ain't we? I just got back from the gym after a ferocious leg day, and I can feel my hamstrings trying to walk me out of this chair right now. But it feels good. And I'm also in the middle, well, not in the middle, I'm at the end of about a 20-hour fast. And when this is done and rendering, I get to go eat, and I'm excited about that. So it feels like I have not had food in months, but that's not the case. But did a little fast just to boost a little collagen, all that good stuff, you know, see if people know what they're talking about. Anyway, let's get on. Let's thank our sponsors for bringing the Wrecking Yard to fruition today. Our good buddies at Jake's Quality Repair LLC up there in Marshfield, Wisconsin. Jake's is your Jake's is your go-to family-owned semi-truck and trailer repair shop that offers roadside service calls for the trucker in need. Blowouts? Call Jake's. Trailer damage? Call Jake's. Driving a Volvo? Call Jake's. It's still going to be a Volvo, but he can fix the other stuff. Need a career change? Call Jake's. He also sells and services snow plows. He can have you out in these streets pushing that frozen white gold in no time. And I know winter seems a long ways away, but what better time to get prepared so you can make that money next snowfall? They also offer all manner of auto repair for all makes and sizes, and they do custom hot rod work too. He does a bunch of LS swaps, all kind of neat stuff. Check out his Facebook page, Jake's Quality Repair LLC, for more information, or contact the man himself at 715-384-6699. That's Jake's Quality Repair LLC for your Central Wisconsin automotive needs. And if you are a truck driver running through Central Wisconsin, there's only one number you need, 715-384-6699. Make sure you call the man. Also, don't forget to check out the Golden Beard Company. It's a 10-year-old global beard brand specializing in organic, natural beard care products in Denmark. I've told y'all a bunch of times that they make my favorite mustache wax. I don't have any on right now because it's gym day. But I like it. I especially like it when I'm on stage because it doesn't get all... A lot of the mustache waxes you get on stage, the lights get hot and then it just droops and it's kind of a mess. So I like theirs holds up and even holds up here in the Houston heat when you're running around during the day. Not overly sticky. Keeps mine looking good. You can get their products at goldenbeards.com, and I believe they're going to be available on Amazon very soon again. Boom diggity. There's our people. Sorry for my giant water jug. It is a balmy, balmy Sunday morning. We're at 80 degrees here in the shop. Probably going to be a little hotter this afternoon. I got to get out there and get that yard mowed. It's rained so much this week, it's growing like crazy. I got to go do something about that. Much as I don't want to. I got to do everything today. I did just get on the way back from the gym. Got a text message I was very excited about, though. I had texted one of the agents involved with Hot Wheels to ask them if they were wanting to be involved again this year. I'm booking stuff out for August, and they come to Houston in August. And they responded with a resounding, hell yes, we want you involved again this year. So August 2nd, I am going to be judging the Hot Wheels Legends Tours again. So, and y'all, those of you that have watched podcasts since last year know what a big deal it was for me and how excited I got about it. So expect about triple that this year. I'm really psyched about it. I just love Hot Wheels and I love being a part of that organization. Really, really looking forward to it. Whew, hope you guys are having a good Sunday. I struggled a little bit writing this one, and I don't know why. It's not like it's a big emotional one. It's just, it's a car my mom had forever, but it's not a car that has what I would say like stories, but it does. There's all these little micro stories about this car, and there's these little micro moments with being my mom. She owned this car from the time I was about 16 to when I bought it from my parents when I was in my early 20s. They had this car a very long time, and it's the car. It's the car that outside of that little Volkswagen reminds me of my mother the most. It's the car. It was Sherry Kay's machine, bro. It was just, and we'll get into it. Got my brisket shirt on today. From Ernest Cervantes and the burnt bean and Seguin, some of the best barbecue I ever had in my life. Damn sure some of the best brisket. And he does this thick cut bacon, smoked bacon that's out of this world. I was like his brisket shirt because I used to work with a guy in the oil field that everybody called brisket. And I thought it was, the dude was like always talking about barbecue and stuff. I just thought he got the nickname because the dude liked making brisket. And then one day, one of the old men pulled me aside. He said, you know, I'm calling brisket because he likes barbecue. We call him brisket because it takes him 8 to 10 hours to do anything. Yeah, every time I look in the mirror and see brisket, I'm like, that seems right. Guarantee I'm going to take about 8 to 10 hours to get that yard work done because I'm just going to screw around and my ADHD or whatever the hell will kick in. I've never been tested, but I'm sure I've got some of it somewhere. I got the ADHD, I guarantee. I'm literally looking at a squirrel on top of my wife's car right now. That's how I know. Squirrel! It's funny to me because I worked with this girl named Jennifer Jones at the Laugh Stop way back in the day. And Jennifer Jones was this sassy black lady, and she was funny as hell. And one day she told me a story about this man she'd been seeing. And he canceled a bunch of plans on her, and she got her heart broke. She was all wrapped up in this dude, and he canceled a bunch of plans on her. But then he hit her up like a week ago. We talked about all the canceled plans. I was like, girl, you can do better than that. You don't need to be wasting your life and your intentions on this man that ain't serious about you, you know? And I feel that way. Like, let that player go. Let him go on down the road. Find you somebody that's all about you. Which she has since then. She's got her king now. It seems like she's doing well every time I check in on her on Facebook. But anyway, so a week or so goes by after the guy cancels all the plans on her and breaks her heart, right? Then he hits her up and leaves her a voicemail, wanting to know if she'll make him some meatloaf that he can take to somebody else's event because he always liked her meatloaf. And it didn't know why she was acting that way, wanted to know if he'd get that meatloaf recipe if she wasn't going to make it for him. And after that, I called Jennifer Meatloaf for the longest time. That was my nickname for her. I was like, hey, Meatloaf! And some of the other people didn't. She was a large woman, you know. We're both big people, and so some of the people at first thought I was like, no, this had nothing to do with her size or anything like that. Tell them the story, Jennifer. I'd have JJ. We call her JJ too. I'd have JJ tell them the story. And like, that's why I call her Meatloaf. We were buddies. We worked together every day. We hung out together every day. You know, at work. Funny enough, she started calling me Lunch Meat. And I was like, well, what the hell? And so she would call me lunch. I'd come in the door, oh, there comes old Lunch Meat. And I finally said, I said, man, why you call me Lunch Meat? Because I call you Meatloaf? She said, no, because you're probably inbred. Old JJ, boy. Probably inbred, old Lunch Meat. Enough of that silliness. Let's get off into it. We got a light. So the car today, y'all know if you looked at the thing. If you didn't, you don't know. If you didn't look at the title, it's a 1992 Ford Taurus. The Ford Taurus, the original Ford Taurus was a freaking milestone for Ford. And really the whole American automotive industry, it's the first automobile designed and manufactured using statistical process control ideas brought to Ford when they recruited W. Edwards Deming. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about this dude because he was one of my dad's heroes. My dad worked in quality control, and my dad ended up writing quality control manuals and processes and ideas for the entire manufacturing industry, but especially across oil and gas. And he literally, he would go out and bring companies up to ISO 9000. Like he was the guy. He's kind of a genius at it. And didn't have a college degree, but he was a big fan of W. Edwards Deming. And W. Edwards Deming was he was an electrical engineer, but he also kind of knew a lot about mathematical physics. He developed the sampling technique still used by United States Census Bureau and the Bureau of Labor Statistics. He's also known as the father of the quality movement. Hugely influential in post-World War II Japan, which Japan is credited with turning quality around, and really a lot of the American quality standards now in manufacturing came from Japan, came from the way Japan was doing things. But it's all because of W. Edwards Deming. He's credited with revolutionizing Japan's industry and making it one of the most dominant economies in the world for a long time. And he's best known for his theories of management. And that's what my dad specialized in, was basically writing these quality manuals for companies. Like, this is how to turn quality control, this is how to turn quality around in your company. Before his ideas came along, the base idea from quality control was there's this quality control department, and they checked some parts and, you know, tried to make sure everything got out the door good, but it was their ass that was getting chewed if things weren't good and yada, yada, yada. W. Edwards Deming said quality had to be a company-wide thing, and quality had to start with the managers. With all the managers of all the departments had to be quality minded and had to have their mind on turning out quality products and basically policing themselves in their own departments. And once companies started adopting this, you started seeing far less for a long time. This is a whole time. Ford called themselves. This is during Ford's quality period, right? Because from 79, so 79 to 1982, Ford was at losses of over $3 billion. A lot of, because of quality problems and all kinds of stuff. And if you've been doing your homework, you've been listening to Uncle Jerry, you know what happened for Ford in 1978. That's right. They fired St. Lee Iacocca, and he went off to go save Chrysler. 1978, Ford made a $3 billion profit. From 79 to 82, Ford lost $3 billion. Maybe those two things don't have anything to do with each other, but you'll be hard-pressed to get me to believe that. They messed around. They fired the king. And Ford was all, they were a mess, bro. We were talking about last week, up until the early 80s, you know, the Mustang, the Fox body that Lee Iacocca helped put the rubber stamp on before he left. He's the guy that car was keeping them alive. So they go out, they say, we got all these quality programs and we want to turn Ford's image on quality around. And they go out and they recruit W. Edwards Deming and go, hey, can you help us fix this? And he goes, I absolutely can. And he said, not only that, he said, I'm going to bring over these ideas about how to design a car. And, you know, a lot of people may not like this. A lot of people do like it. But these statistical process controls ideas are what created the Ford Taurus. Ford Taurus was the first sedan to be put on the market without a front grille, with that breather, front end nose, you know, bottom breather. A lot of people call them catfish, especially later on, later generations. They kind of look like a catfish. They were the first car to do that. That was all about aerodynamics. With that front end, the Ford could meet the more stringent CAFE fuel regulations, but still have, you know, just a little more power, a little more go. That was the push. those things, the way that car was designed, some people call it ponton styling. And it was strictly to meet CAFE regulations, but also get better fuel mileage out of a full-size sedan. And within, I mean, they launched the car in 85. From 85 to 2007, there's over 7 million Ford Tauruses produced. 7.5 million. It's the fifth best-selling nameplate for Ford in North America, right behind the F-Series, Escort, Model T, and the Mustang. Those are some big names to be running with. The F-Series is one of the best-selling trucks of all time. I know everybody's like, oh, they count GM and Chevrolet separate. Well, they do, though, and there's a reason they do that. But the F-Series is one of the best-selling trucks of all time. It has been for like 48 years. You can be mad about it all you want. I don't necessarily like the new ones, but it just is. Between 92 and 1996, the Taurus is the best-selling car nameplate in the United States, only knocked off of its throne by the Toyota Camry. The Taurus was a Toyota Camry before Toyota Camry mattered. When they put out the Taurus, Ford had mostly just been making rear-wheel drive cars, and Chrysler and General Motors were already offering more front-wheel drive vehicles up mid-range, including the Chrysler K platform. You also know from our homework, you used to talk about this, is the Iacocca pushing that front-wheel drive platform. I don't necessarily enjoy front-wheel drive cars, but I can understand the appeal behind them as an automotive manufacturer. So Ford puts out the Escort and the Tempo, kind of making the transition to front-wheel drive. And then the Taurus, they put the Taurus out, looked like a flying potato or a jelly bean. It was based off the Audi 5000 and the Ford Sierra, which is like a European sedan. And it was an updated appearance. Basically, they were using a styling approach from the late 40s to get this look. And so instead of a grill, they mainstreamed the smooth grillless that had the bottom breather nose. The success of the Ford Taurus ultimately leads to an American automobile manufacturing revolution, because Chrysler and General Motors followed suit just as quick as they could, developing aerodynamic cars in order to capitalize on the Taurus's success. The Taurus, people also kind of liked the Taurus when it first came out, because if you remember, it had them kind of squarish headlights. It kind of looked a little bit like that Ford Mustang SVO in the front end. Now, my mom's was a second gen, which is like, I think it's 1991. 92, they restylized the entire outside of the car. The second gen Ford Taurus, first car to ever have dual airbags, which becomes an industry standard, you know, a couple of years after that. But it was the first midsize sedan marketed with dual airbags. The second generation was the best-selling car in the United States and maintained the title throughout its duration of production. 1.4 million units produced before ending production in 1995. And a lot of you have seen over the years, I mean, I don't know what I'm saying there. A lot of you have seen the Taurus SHO, which I've driven a couple of those things. They were fun as hell. My dad's buddy at work had one for a while. I got to drive. Then I got to drive a later year model. The generation after the second gen, the third gen Taurus, was that was Ford's new NASCAR, you know, and it made a bunch of waves in the NASCAR world. The SHO had a 3-liter V6 that was designed as a collaboration with Yamaha. All the rest of the show, well, in the 80s, in the first generation, they had a four banger option. They had a manual transmission. They had a couple different V6s. There was this 3.8 Essex V6. It's real vibrating, but they used that in all the Ford actually produced some police interceptor packages. for the Ford Taurus that police departments used. Every once in a while, me and my brother Joey, we used to drive back and forth to Beaumont a lot. And every once in a while, driving back and forth to Beaumont, we would see there was this Texas state trooper who drove a Ford Taurus. And all the rest of the state troopers had the Mustangs, right, which were much cooler, or they had the big body, you know, Crown Vicks or whatever else, you know. And we used to laugh every time we saw the Ford Taurus guy because we wondered how he got stuck driving the Ford Taurus. We had it in our minds that maybe every week at the state trooper training facility or wherever, they had to fight to see who got the car they want, you know. And this poor little bastard just kept getting stuck with the Ford Taurus because he kept getting his ass kicked every week. I don't know if that's probably not how they decided who drove the Ford Taurus. But if any of you have any experience with Texas State Highway Patrol, I would love to know how you got stuck driving the Ford Taurus. Because I only ever saw that one state highway man driving that Ford Taurus, and he never looked happy about it. He was always pulling everybody over. Yeah, man, Taurus came along and picked Ford up, man. Gave them sales back, kept them in the game a little longer. That little 3-liter engine they designed with Yamaha was pretty cool, man. Those little SHOs would get down. My mom's was a GL trim package, so it had the 3-liter Vulcan engine, which the Vulcan engine was pretty much designed specifically for the Ford Taurus. This was an engine that was designed with these ideas in mind. It was a completely metric engine. One of the things I remember about that car is my dad had a toolbox set up with only metric tools in it for when we worked on that Taurus, because he got everything else we had a little bit of this, a little bit of that, but that Taurus was complete metric. Yeah, you've heard me mention several times talking about different V6s over the years. 60-degree V6s, the Vulcan's a 60-degree V6. When it comes to V6s, a 60-degree V6 remains the champion. It remains the best configuration, the most reliable configuration. Doesn't always put out the most power, but definitely the most reliable V6 configuration there is. They used that 3-liter Vulcan engine in everything for a while. If you owned an 86 through 97 Aerostar, 86 through 2007 Taurus, or Mercury Sable, 90 through 92 Probe, 91 through 2008 Ford Ranger, 92 through 94 Tempo, 92 through 94 Topaz, 94 through 2007 Mazda B3000, or a 95 to 2000 Ford Windstar, the chances that you had a 3-liter Vulcan engine in it, pretty good. Pretty good. It was used a lot. It was an overhead bow pushrod engine designed from the beginning to be uncomplicated and easy to repair. And if somebody has worked on a lot of them, I can tell you, they're really not bad to work. The transverse, we did the head gaskets one time on that transverse one. That was the only flaw they really had, is they had head gasket problems from time to time. But usually, once you did them correctly, the right way again, if you didn't overheat it again, you would never have problems with it again. But we did the head gaskets on that. And on the transverse, it was kind of a pain in the ass. But I've done the head gaskets on several Ford Rangers that had that 3-liter in them, and really wasn't that bad to get in there and do it. I mean, head gaskets suck, but as far as head gaskets go, I've done worse. I did head gaskets on a transverse V8 one time, and I told that buddy never to call me again about that car. That 3-liter was the Vulcan 3-liter was there's so many jokes about it, you know. It was gas mileage of the 4.0, but the power of the 4-cylinder. They were not powerful. My buddy's Ford Ranger, he had his in, I think it was a 96. He had that 3-liter in, and literally you could fill that bed up with shit and floor it, and it was going to go the same speed as it did when the bed was empty. I mean, that engine was just, would pull greasy string out of a cat's ass. It was a fast engine, you know. You couldn't do a lot to modify them, or they'd really start cooking head gaskets in. But they're reliable as hell. Ooh, excuse me. You can find them, I mean, just left and right, over 200,000 miles on them, no problem. You know, if you're just looking something reliable, that little 3-liter Vulcan do it every time. And that's kind of the, just give you a little base. The Taurus is an interesting car. I didn't realize all that stuff about W. Edward Deming until I started reading about it. And I got really excited because I knew that dude was like a hero of my old band. And I knew my dad followed a lot of his principles and ideas when he started writing his own quality manuals and when he started designing quality control systems for big companies. And I mean, like made like Toshiba, my dad consulted for and turned their quality programs around. Like this dude from Kilgore with no college degree, still doesn't have a college degree. You know, like I said, doesn't have a college degree, been VP of GE, been, you talk about working son of a 50, old man. But he learned the way a lot of us learn the best, not sitting through a seminar, not sitting in a classroom, not drilling, just by doing, just by executing ideas and seeing what works and what doesn't. It's always been the best way I learned. I learned hands-on better than any other way. I used to have to sit through lectures and stuff for work, and it was the worst. I would basically sit there and record the whole thing and then go home later and actually try working out the problems myself, listening to the recordings. And that was the only way I ever learned. I didn't learn from sitting in that lecture. The Ford Taurus, man, that was I wish I could remember. Ford had like a little thing back then, quality. I don't know. It was after the better ideas. They had some little slogan. Can't remember what it was. The little Ford Tauruses, man, they are everywhere, bro. You can still find them. You still see people driving them up and down the road. It was one of those old cars just lasted long time. Now, one of the problems they did, one of the other failures with the Ford Taurus was that was the AXOD transaxle, and those things, they had all kind of failure issues. So a lot of times you see Ford Tauruses in junkyards because they blow the transmission out or whatever. Most of them, what happens, they lose like first or second gear, they start slipping real bad, and then some of them, the parking, I have a thing to this day. This is funny as hell. And I didn't realize it until I was reading about this car. But I remember at some point as a young person, my dad was always, if you park an automatic, you put the emergency brake on. Because it don't take nothing to break that little pawl off in the transmission, ruin that transmission. And he would tell me that all the time. And I pulled a car up in his driveway. It was automatic. Put it in park. I better put that damn emergency brake on, or there's going to be a talking to. And, you know, there's some things that just get drilled into you that you just carry on in your life and you never really question. You just go, I don't know, this way to do it. Somebody taught me to do it this way. And so I very much was on Rachel about it, you know, with some of her cars and stuff. And we all, you know, emergency brake them automatics when you stop them, even on a flat driveway. And I found out there was a reason my dad got all worked up about this was because the Ford Taurus, that was one of the biggest problems, that people put that thing in park on a damn hill and it would break that little pawl off in the transmission and screw the transmission up. And that all goes back to this Ford Taurus. I thought that was some stuff my dad learned growing up, but no, he'd been reading about these Tauruses and all these people coming in with these broke transmissions. He wasn't going to have it to his. They bought that car. I think I was about 15 when they bought it. That would have been 94, 95, somewhere in there. I'm so old, I can't remember. Yeah, they bought it. My parents had a thing for a while. My dad had a thing. And my dad would buy cars from Enterprise Rental Car. Every once in a while, every year or so, Enterprise Rental Car would come out and sell a bunch of their fleet off. And my dad liked buying cars for my mom out of that fleet. Now, I told you, my mom was a car killer. Sherry Kay destroyed a car. She'd kill an engine, transmission. They didn't have a chance against her. His theory was, he goes and buys these cars from Enterprise Rental Car because nobody treats cars worse than they treat rental cars. He said, so if they got a fleet car over a rental car company, it's got 70,000 miles on it, then that car's already had all the stupid stuff break on it and been fixed. And that car can weather some abuse because it's already been beat the hell out of and it's still hanging in there and it was still good enough to rent out. So that's what they got looking for mom for a new car. And this maybe it was 94. It was like 2 years old, I think, when they got it. Had 70,000 miles on it, I think. They bought it from an Enterprise Rental Car. It was white, had the gray bumpers. It was the GL trim level, which was not the fancy trim level. The fancy trim level had all the bumpers painted the body color and all that kind of stuff, color-keyed bumpers. Which I think they got rid of that at some point. And made all of them color keyed bumpers, but in the early 90s, that was one of the trim levels, was the GL trim level, and it meant the bumpers and everything were still gray, and it was like a few less things interior wise. But this is also one of the first cars where they started putting all the radio control stuff on the steering wheel, and all the controls were kind of geared towards the left side of the dash, and everything was kind of raised so that you could use it in the dark or use it without looking at it. These cars were all about safety. My nanny used to call it the LaTaurus. I don't know why she did that. She always said, Sherry, how's your LaTaurus doing? She called my mom's car the LaTaurus. Me and Kimberly called it the tortoise. And I've heard a lot of mechanics call it Torass. That car was the Longmire tank, though. That car did all the work. I took my driver's test in that car. My mama drove me out. See, back then, when you went to go take your driver's test, I don't know how it is now, it's been so many years since I've done it, but you had to go down to the DMV and you had to have an insured registered car. I mean, I'm sure all those rules are still the same. You had to have all these things in place and all your paperwork, your learner's permit, your driver's ed, and all that good shit stamped off on your birth certificate when you went to go get your first driver's license. It was a big deal. But we lived in, even in A-Leaf, the Houston DMVs were just insane, man. You'd go in the DMV back then and draw ticket number 1,000. And they'd be serving ticket number 32. And there was no hurry. So my mom got me in the car. And she had talked to her friend who lived out in Rosenberg. And she said, hey, man, the Rosenberg DMV is usually only about 5 or 6 people in there at a time. And they do driver's tests all the time. And so we just made a day of it. Me and mom get in the car. And she drove me out to Rosenberg. And so when my mom took driver's ed, she took it at Leverage Chapel in Northeast Texas, this little small town, her little school, Leverage Chapel. Her coach taught driver's ed, and that coach was notorious. He was teaching kids how to drive. He'd take them out on a curvy-ass Sexton Road, run off in the woods and stuff, and make them floor it, make them get the car in a skid so they could drive out of a skid. My mom believed in all that stuff. She would make me drive. I had my learner's permit, so she had me drive out to Rosenberg in the traffic and everything, and all the time. She had me pumping gas when I was, for her, I think maybe because she didn't want to pump gas when I was much younger. But all these things she was always telling me, she was like, I just want you to be a good driver. I want you to be a safe driver. Even though she was very unsafe. And all along I'd hear stories, my dad and his hot rod and all the stuff he did, she didn't want me to do none of that. Which, of course, made me want to do all that. Yeah, we drove out to Rosenberg to the DMV. And just as advertised, there were like 3 or 4 people in there. And I sign up and give them my paperwork and everything. And I go take the written test, which of course do fine on, and sit there. I would see all these movies. Do you remember all the movies that came out in the '80s where, or even the TV shows where people were like failing their driver's ed test? Like, how do you fail the written test of the drive? That's the easiest, dumbest test I've ever taken in my life. It's just pretty much common sense. I never identified with those, but license to drive, any of that stuff. I was just like, you're an idiot. You shouldn't be driving if you can't pass that dumb asshole test. There's nothing to it. That was the easy part. The difficult part came when the guy comes in to give him a driver's test, like he's going to go ride with me in the car. And this dude, I thought it was just going to be, I didn't know it was going to be a state trooper. This guy come in, and he looked like he was about late 50s. Of course, I was 16 then. Everybody looked old as shit. Back then, late 50s looked different than late 50s now. Back then, late 50s looked antique. And this dude come out bald-headed, glasses, big as a country ox. Big old human being. And he looked like he hated me. I don't blame him. I might have. But he didn't look like he cared for most things. He looked unhappy. He come out, he looks at his clipboard. Which one of y'all is Jerry Longmire? All right, son, let's go do this driving test. And I looked at my mom like, can you do something about this? Can you get me a different guy? My mom was like, go do your driving test. I was like, all right, here we go. Does this guy look like he hates me already? I was nervous as shit. I remember I got behind the wheel of that Taurus and started adjusting my mirrors and stuff. He goes, put your damn seatbelt on. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That would be the first thing you do every time you get in the car, son. Put that seatbelt on. I'm tired of pulling y'all out of cars for not wearing your seatbelt. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So, are you going to adjust your seat? That seat looks like it's too close for you. You need to back up a little. Now, don't forget your beers. Well, I was already working on them when you start yelling at me about the seatbelt. All right, I want you to pull out into the lane of traffic. And I just poof, off into the lane of traffic. He just looked at me. Let off that gas a little bit. I got through that driver's test. I wanted my driver's license bad enough. I was willing to. That old man was something else, man. He rode my ass that whole time. We got back and pulled in and parked. I actually hit the brakes a little too hard. We kind of jerked forward. And I go, well, did I pass? He goes, yeah, you're fine. You're fine. All right. And I took my seatbelt off. And, don't ever take your seatbelt off till you turn the car off. Yes, sir. Turn the car off. Take the seatbelt. He was a hoss. That was the day I got my drive out in Rosenberg, Texas. There wasn't much out there back then. It was just a little podunk town. By the time my parents moved out there years later, it was all growed up and different. One of my favorite barbecue joints was in that town. It's called Swinging Door Barbecue. I used to do comedy shows out there. For old Steve Olmstead. That was wasn't a bad little joint. My mom did so many trips in that car. When I was trying to go to college, I was planning on going to college for a little while, and I had a offer from the Wharton Community College, but Wharton had a big art program. I was really big in drawing, doing art, stuff like that. So like my junior year, where I was trying to figure out what I was going to do after school, you know, my parents wanted me to get prepared and all that kind of stuff. She drove me out to the Wharton College and went out there and talked to the art program. They really liked what I was about, what I was doing. She drove me over. The Art Institute of Houston went over there. They'd offered me a little small scholarship, assuming that my grades stayed okay. It may have been already my senior year when we were looking at this. I have a hard time remembering some of that stuff, the timeline of it. I told y'all the story. I got hit by a truck on my bicycle, and that kind of threw art school out the window for me. Right. She had that car, and then by the time I was 16, I already had my 72 Ford. And I'd be driving that around. But, boy, I'd be up acting a fool over at West Oaks Mall doing something. I see that white Ford Taurus and shut it down, baby. Man, I was going to get my ass, boy. Mama liked to go to that mall. It was easy to find that white Ford Taurus. I think I told you a story about stealing that little Cutlass Sierra and going to the mall with Melissa in it one time when I was 15. We cruised around the mall. I mean, we did it several times. One time we went up there and saw my mom leaving the mall to go back to the house. I had to race her back to the house on the opposite road so she didn't see me. Old Leadfoot Cherokee. My mom would back that car out of the driveway, point that Taurus in the direction she's going to go, foot down, gone, bud. I don't know. I don't remember how many times she wrecked it. She rear-ended a couple people and got rear-ended a couple times. That poor Taurus had the front and rear bumpers on it replaced at least three or four times. That's the car. I think I told you all the story about my dad almost taking me out at it when he did the brakes on it in Louisiana. He was living in Pineville. He went to back it out of the garage, thought he'd scare me and hit the gas and forgot he hadn't pumped up the brakes, backed that Taurus up a tree. Luckily, they still had the collision insurance and got the car all fixed up. They took that car everywhere. They drove that car to Florida a couple times. They took that damn car. They took it up Arkansas. They took that car to Tennessee. Back and forth. I mean, back and forth. My mom, so my mom's, and I haven't talked about her a lot, but my mom was always trying to save her sisters. My mom's sisters just, they went through it as far as life is concerned. And I'm not here to cast judgment or aspersion on that. I used to have different thoughts about it when I was younger, but as I get older and I realize how difficult life is, I realize it's really easy to make dumb decisions and screw yourself up. And I have a different view on it nowadays. But my mom's youngest sister is my Aunt Lori. My Aunt Lori is younger than my Uncle Bobby and not that far apart from my Aunt Lori was, I think my Aunt Lori's maybe about 8 years older than me. But when I was growing up, she lived with us a lot. Well, we lived with Granny for a while, and she lived in that house. She was still a kid, young teenager. Aunt Lori was more like, Aunt Lori doesn't feel like an aunt to me. Aunt Lori is like my big sister that I don't see very often. She lives out in California now. I don't get to see her very often. Every once in a while, I think last time I talked to her, her oldest daughter died of liver failure. Who was younger than me, my little cousin Brittany, a year or so back. And I think that's the last time I talked to my Aunt Lori. I don't get to talk to her. I should reach out to her more. But when she was younger, she grew up in that crazy house my mom did, and she wanted out too. And she shacked up with some dude and got pregnant and married this guy who was not a great guy. And they went on a path together, and that path involved a lot of drugs. I believe some prostitution, a lot of crack houses, a lot of stealing. He was a thief and a half, and she became pretty good. She embezzled a whole bunch of money from the county one time. Like got in trouble with that, and then committed mail fraud and ended up in federal penitentiary doing time out in California. She's done some hard prison time here and there, and all that's behind her now, and the drug, all that stuff's behind her now. But it cost her relationship with her children, you know, to some degree, and certainly put them through the ringer. And my mom was always trying to save her. My mom would drive that Taurus to a crack house and go in there with a derringer in her purse and drag Lori out of that place and bring her back to her. You know, just she just didn't get, when it come her little sister, my mama would have drove right up to the gates of hell and demanded they let her in to get her. And of course, that guy, you know, beat Lori and all kinds of, it was a lot of horrible stuff. But she's more like my big sister than she is my aunt. And yeah, my mom tried to save everybody. My mom liked to control everybody. We jokingly in the family called her Bella, like she was mafioso or something running the family, because she liked to control everything that was going on, and she liked to have her thumb on what everybody was doing. And I said that in my mom's eulogy, I said, you know, at some point me and my mom's relationship became a struggle because of the different plans that we both had for me, because she had a plan for me and it wasn't the one I chose. And that did not sit well with Sherry Kay. But she ran her house. She was always trying to save her sisters, raise their kids. All of my mom's sisters' kids lived with my mom at some point while mom was trying to help them. My cousin Candida lived with her. Bridget, Brittany, and Brandon all lived with my parents. They lived with my parents for a long time. Little Jenny lived with my mom and dad for a while when we were kids. It was unusual for us to have to change up the way our rooms were set up so we could bring in some cousins to live with us, because mom was going to do it. My mom, she helped her other sister get her teeth fixed so she could get a job. She helped them out with money, all kind of stuff. Anything she could do, she was always trying to help them get away from the drugs and the problems. She did a lot for Uncle Bobby too. You know, probably not quite as much as she did, but Rashonda's the only one Bobby's daughter's the only one that never lived with us that I remember growing up. Maybe there was a brief time, but I don't really remember it. But Shawnee's mom always had her back, you know. But my mom was always trying to save her sisters. They all married different dudes that would beat on them and whoop on them and stuff. And over the years, I've got a big old bag of clothes in the trunk of my car. They're old clothes, Rachel's business clothes, and clothes that she doesn't wear anymore because she doesn't do that kind of stuff anymore. But that's where I'm taking them over to. There's a women's shelter not far from here, because that's the kind of stuff my mom did. She had stuff like that to give away. She would take it to the women's shelter and try to help out. And it's kind of clothes somebody can use to go get a job, do a job interview. If there's any jobs left, who knows what's going on in the world right now. Yeah, that car was Sherry Kay's battle tank, buddy. She fought all her battles in that car. Nothing worse than the day you get out of school and be walking out and see my mom's car up there at the admin parking lot because she got called in about some shit I'd done. I would use that car every once in a while. When I got my senior year of high school, I got really into, and I don't remember what spurred it. I think it was, I needed some extra. I told y'all I had screwed up a bunch of my grades. I was trying to get all my grades caught up, but I wasn't taking as many art classes because my arm was all screwed up. And I had to take some electives. So I got in, it was either speech or theater. And I took theater thinking, what I'd really heard is all the screw-ups went in the theater class because you could get away with whatever you want because it was an easy A. So I took theater thinking it was an easy A. And it was not an easy A. We had these two theater directors, Mr. Dias and Mr. Hurst, were very serious about their theater program. And the very first day in theater class, Mr. Dias was this big old bear of a man. He was awesome. He had a fully restored Ford Econoline pickup and a Ford Falcon pickup, and he would drive them to school. They were both teal and white. They were beautiful, and he had restored them by hand himself, but he had been an actor. He had played in The King and I. He had done serious acting for a number of years in his life, and he was a big old man. He was well over 6 foot tall, big booming voice, big beard. He left an impression on me, clearly. Mr. Dice told me I was cutting up first day in his class. And Mr. Dice singled me out. He said, I know. All these school counselors like to think every time they got a kid that can't sit right and act right in any other class, that he just needs to come to theater class and express himself. I'm here to tell you, if your counselor stuck you in here because you think you're getting an easy A because you're going to come over here and express yourself, that's going to be, you're going to participate, you're going to be a part of this theater program, or I'm going to kick you out of this class faster than you got put in it. And he was serious, staring me down the whole time. And I was like, but then after class, I remember this too. There was a girl I was friends with in the class, my buddy Wade's sister, Nicole Piazza. Me and her were good friends, and she was a serious theater nerd. She was all about it. And she got me kind of interested. She was cool. She was fun to be around. Not like a romantic thing. She was just a cool chick. I always liked Nicole. Thought she was cool. She was like a year younger than me. But she was always... You know, when I go spend the night at my buddy's house, she was there. So we had known each other for a long time. We were friends. After class, me and Nicole were picking up our bags. We're going to walk out and go to our next class. Mr. Dias said, Longmire, hold up just a minute. Cole, you can go ahead and go. And she boogied on out the door. And she was terrified of Mr. Dias. She was a little bitty old thing. He was this huge booming bed. And I turned around like, okay, I guess I'm getting kicked out of the class the first day. Yeah, Mr. Dice, what's up? He says, is that your 72 Ford truck out there in the parking lot? Yes, sir. Yeah, that's fine. Me and my dad have been working on it and everything. That's a fine looking truck. That's a fine looking truck. I'd like to hear it run sometime. Okay. Well, I'll be starting up while I leave. He says, if I'm out there in the parking lot, I might have to walk over. I'd like to hear that thing. Got a big block in it? Yes, sir. I like a Ford big block. All right. Back right tomorrow. See you in class. Sent me on my way. I got wrapped up in it. I didn't think I was going to, but I enjoyed theater. We would have to do monologues and stuff, and I would find myself, for the first time ever, at home after school, working on stuff for school. I would be going to, I did a monologue by Pat Morita, from a play he did. You know, Pat Morita, I don't know. Some of y'all probably know. Pat Morita was like, he goes back to vaudeville. Pat Morita was stand-up comic, did vaudeville, did everything, did Broadway theater, all kinds of stuff. He was in a Japanese internment camp. He did plays in the Japanese internment camp during World War II. Pat Morita was really accomplished, talented man. And I did a monologue of his from, I think it's called Under the T-Moon. I might have that. I'll have to look that up. I have that wrong. But I did a monologue of his, and I worked on it for months, and Mr. Dice would work with me on my enunciation and my projection. And we would talk cars. Mr. Dice took me for a ride in his Conline pickup one time. It was cool. He was one of the first teachers, I think, that really got through to me, that like taught me that, you know, you can hate the rest of school, but you can find something you like about it. I found myself certainly putting more effort into theater than I thought I was going to. Mr. Dias liked me too, but Mr. Dias was a very effeminate ex-Holy Ghost, like come from Bible Thumper Church in Oklahoma, and he got along better with the girls. But Mr. Dice liked me because he needed a straight man for part. A lot of the guys in theater were kind of, were effeminate and not necessarily voiced or built to play roles of your average blue collar guy. And all those plays have some dude. I mean, I even did some British farce. I did The Importance of Being Earnest. Mr. Dias yelled at me because I was the butler, and my line was, turn the light on. But what I said was, turn the light on. And Mr. Dias, I remember him jumping out of his director's chair and running, what is on? You own the light now? It's on. It's on. Well, if it's you, my house, we turn the light on. I was about to have that. Was it Trace Atkins said that song? Every light in the house is on. Backyard bright as a crack of dawn. My friends are good. That's why you can't talk, right? You keep listening to that music. The light is on. It's not on. Yeah, he gave me some grief about that. Mr. Dias was, Mr. Dias, the big booming guy, was the one that like really pushed me to start auditioning for plays outside of just the stuff we were doing in class. And I ended up doing UIL theater. My parents are always against, kind of like against me doing art, and, you know, that just wasn't pathways they saw to success. And it wasn't what they were exposed to, you know, in their area growing up. And so, but my mom always kind of secretly supported it. My mom, you know, she took me art school and took me, she would buy me art supplies and big pads and, you know, all kind of special pencils. We'd go down to Texas Art Supply and she'd get me stuff. And my mom liked my art. My mom liked that I could draw, that I had these things I could do. My mom liked when I started doing theater, my mom came to every play, everything she could come to, every performance we did. We did a version of an old play called Dark of the Moon, which is kind of an Appalachian play, and I played this just real scumbag in it named Marvin Hagler. And he's a big part of the story. In fact, the finale of the whole play is based largely on him. And I really think those experiences helped me later on when I got into comedy, because that was the, we would go up to these UIL competitions and I would get these notes like, speak from your diaphragm, push from your diaphragm, project your voice. That's where I learned to have this voice. That's where I built this voice, like the strength behind it. Not the way necessarily the sounds, the twang or the accent, but the ooh, all that come from doing all those theater, because I won best actor a couple times and several awards doing it, and really enjoyed doing it. And enough that I was offered a theater scholarship to Kilgore College from Dr. Kathy Barber to go study theater further, which they had a really amazing theater program for a small college. I didn't end up going, but there was an opportunity there that I just didn't end up pursuing. Doesn't matter. Too far off the, getting off the subject here. But this is all that time. That when I think of this car, that's why I told you, there's no big stories, just these little micro stories. That car, I would walk out in the parking lot after a play performance, and that car would be there. And I used that car. That old Ford truck of mine was broke down all the time. You know, I gild the lily when I talk about it, but that thing left me on the side of the road more than any vehicle I've ever had in my life, that old 72 Ford truck, because we were piecemealing it together, nickel and diming it. It was, what was it, 82, 92? Yeah, at this point, it was 20-something-year-old truck. And I was driving it like it was a brand new. I was out there with my foot off in it every time I got in it. Sure, a good deal of it was operator error. So they'd let me use that car every once in a while, you know, for something. I remember we got tickets to the rodeo, me and my brother, me and Joey. We got tickets to the rodeo, and we're going to take dates. We're going to go see Alan Jackson at the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo. I've seen Alan Jackson two or three times at the rodeo. And I had my little girlfriend, Amy, and I forgot who he was dating at the time. He had some old gal he was going to take with him. My parents wouldn't let me take my truck. They wouldn't let me take my Ford trucks. My dad didn't want me getting down there. The Astrodome, this is before Reliant existed, but the Astrodome, they're in the same place, kind of over off 610 and kind of on the south side of 610, where things used to be a little rough. You know, they're not as bad now, but they're pretty rough back in the 90s. My dad didn't want me breaking down that truck over there with that little gal with me and him having to come rescue us and hoping we didn't get shot or whatever the hell. So they made me take that Ford Taurus. I did not want to take that car. I was so embarrassed about having to take that car on that date. Yeah, I went and I picked Amy up in it, and she got in the car and got buckled in when we was driving. And all the way to the Astro Dome, she was just going on about how nice that car was and how much she liked it. And I should have known right then me and her was doomed. Like, are you kidding me? We could have been in a 72 Ford truck. This car ain't worth shit. I don't want to drive a Taurus, no mom car, damn rodeo. To the rodeo? I'm going to take a Taurus to the rodeo, and you think it's nice. Oh, hell, that car. Should have known then we were done. It wasn't much longer after that we broke up. Every once in a while, I'd have to take that car if I was going to go running around at night or whatever, my truck was broke down, if I was going to go hang out with my friends. I had learned, this is funny. I had learned that I could crawl up under that car with a 14-millimeter ratchet socket, and I could unhook the catalytic converter. I could loosen that. There was like a U-bolt back there I could loosen, and I could pull the catalytic converter back, and then the car would just be straight pipe, right? And it'd get loud as shit. Like a big old buzzing bumblebee. And then I'd go to the parking lot where all my friends hung out and try to get everybody to race and tell them all these wild stories about how theirs was a special version that had the SHO engine in it. That's why it sounded like that. And we were all dumb teenagers. Nobody knew what I was doing, but nobody would ever race that car. I'd try to get them to race that little 3-liter Ford Taurus. They were like, no, I sounded like that. I did that like 3 or 4 times, man. Nobody would ever race it. And I came home one night and I forgot to fix it. I forgot to undo my handiwork. Pulled it up in the driveway. Next day, my dad was going to use the car to go to work because his car was acting up. So I hear my dad get up, go outside, start the car up. And I hear that boom, and I was like, my dad come back in the house, slammed the door, yanked open my door. Hey, you notice that car was making all that racket last night? Or did you just have the damn stereo up too loud? Like there was any amount of stereo that would have covered the sound that car was making. Oh, man, I forgot to put my hearing aids in. I wonder if they sound weird. Oh, I don't. I tried to play dumb. What? Come on here. Go out there and drive away. My dad starts the car. Shut up. You didn't hear that? You didn't hear that. You was driving around all night last night. You didn't hear that. I was like, oh, something must have happened. Did you hit a bump or something? I was like, oh, there was this little bump on an A-leaf club, the railroad tracks by our house. I was like, maybe I came over the road. Maybe you did. And I go, well, let's look under there and see if we can see what's wrong with it. And I crawl up under there. Now, my dad knew the level and abilities I had as a mechanic at that point in my life. They weren't good. They weren't great. I get down looking for a car. I'm like, oh, Dad, looks like part of the exhaust come unhooked. Well, can you reach up under there and get it? Yeah, I can get it. And I shoved them back together. And I was like, there's a clamp here. My dad goes, he goes, well, I'll go get you a wrench. What size wrench you need? I go, I think it's a 14-millimeter. Give me a ratchet with a 14-millimeter. And he started to take a step away, and he stopped. And then I saw him get down on his knees and look under that car at me, under that car. He goes, you go get that damn ratchet. I bet you know exactly where it's at. So I topped up, run and grab that ratchet, come in there and tighten the shit out of that clamp. Yep. He said, that better not happen again. Yes, sir. That's a good way to warp a valve, you moron. I would drive that car around all night with no exhaust on. Miracle I didn't drive the old man to drinking. Transmission did go out in that one a couple times. You know what happened? This is great, Uncle Larry. This is Uncle Larry. This is peak Uncle Larry. So we went down. So after my parents moved to Louisiana, they was living over in Pineville, Louisiana. And I was over there visiting or something one day. This is when I'm going through. This is when I'm kind of basically homeless, living in my wrecker. And I took the bus over to Louisiana to go visit my parents and hang out with them. We were all going to a big wedding. And my cousin Shane and Julie's wedding. We were all going. I was in the wedding. So I had to go meet my parents in Louisiana, ride with them to the wedding, and get fitted for the suit and all that good stuff. This is when my mom basically found I was homeless because I had everything I owned in this big ass bag. But I went over there. I was hanging out with them, and we went down to Lafayette. And I think we just went down there to go like eat seafood. So I remember I ate gator that day. It was real rubbery. I've had it since then a lot better, but that one was real rubbery. It was at some chain joint. But we're driving around Lafayette, and it started slipping real bad between first and second gear, which was a common problem for those AXODs, and shifting real hard and acting up. And so we limped it back to Pineville, and Dad put it in a shop there in Pineville, and they had it fixed in a couple days, and then we drove it to Kilgore. And I mean, less than 3,000 miles on it, you know, post repair from a transmission franchise there in Pineville, who later on ruined transmission in my, they're the same ones that did my Trans Am transmission too. Anyway, started acting up in Kilgore. Lost first gear. It smelled like transmission fluid and everything. My dad took it over to Uncle Larry's. Him and Uncle Larry dropped that front wheel drive transmission in the driveway. And Uncle Larry worked on that, went and bought some parts, come back, went to the junkyard, got some stuff, come back and worked on that AXOD in his driveway with my dad. And they worked on it like 10 o'clock at night, put that back in the car. And that transmission never gave anybody a bit of worry ever again. Uncle Larry was bad. He was a big old dude. Didn't look like he did anything, but he was just magic when it came to cars. He fixed it. Fixed it for good. I lived with him in Louisiana for a little while. I went and lived there for just a little bit. Not a long time. Those are some of that was good times. So my favorite thing about that little house in Louisiana they had was had a big old screen porch and then a big carport, big long driveway. But the kitchen kind of like faced the driveway and had this big like nook where they had a table. And my mom loves games. My mom's queen of spades. Like, she is so good at spades. Really good at Monopoly. There's an old lore story. She didn't want to get on the wrong side of mom playing Monopoly because she'd get mad and throw the board. Because one time she was playing Monopoly with my dad, my Uncle Orlando, and my Aunt Janet. Caught my dad, my Uncle Orlando cheating. She just jumped up and threw the whole Monopoly board there. Raised hell at everybody about it. She didn't like no cheater. Well, she get on you. She got mad at me and Uncle Bobby was cheating at spades one time. She caught us switching hand signals under the table, giving each other. She come down and got her ass. I used to love playing spades, my mama. She was serious, boy. Those were turning some raucous matches. That little kitchen table there in Pineville, Louisiana. I have a hard time describing my mom. She just had my back. All the time. She's driving that car. When I decided to move to Wisconsin, she was driving that car. That's when she called my dad and asked him to call somebody he knew that was high up at the company I worked for and get my trip to Wisconsin canceled, get my transfer canceled. Because before that, the day before that, she took me driving around that Taurus and she took me up to Mervyn's or wherever to get a nice winter coat, get some cold weather clothes she wanted to get for me. And she spent that whole day telling me everything was great about you, trying to talk me out of going to Wisconsin. And years later in Louisiana, when I decided I was going to move to Florida, she took me for riding that Ford Taurus, tried to spend that whole day talking me out of going to Florida. When I was living in Louisiana, got a job at the prison, she took me for riding that Ford Taurus, spent the whole day trying to talk me out of working at the prison. I hadn't talked much about it, but this is a little gal that I just fell head over heels for. When I was in Wisconsin, I met this gal named Sandy, and I moved back, and nothing was happening between us in Wisconsin, but we started talking online a lot after I moved back home and got really close enough that we were having basically a long distance relationship. Sandy drives down to Louisiana to see me. Drove down to my parents' house in Pineville, all the way to Wisconsin, 14 hours. And we have this awesome weekend. And I was infatuated with this girl. I was so in love. I was just head over heels over Sandy. She was a police dispatcher for the Milwaukee PD. And I thought we clicked. I just had it bad for her. I took her to Houston, introduced her to all my friends. Yeah, we were making serious plans. We were hemming and hawing about either me going back to Wisconsin or her moving to Louisiana. And either one, I was down for. And she, kind of feeling like she needed a change, was talking about moving down there with me. And I was like, yeah, man. And she goes back to Wisconsin. We're making plans. And my mom liked her, but my mom was like, yeah, you just, you know, don't get too carried away. There was something about her my mom couldn't put her finger on. My mom loved her, just thought the world of her, but she was always telling me, I'll believe it when I see her down here again, or I'll believe it when y'all make some serious plans about doing something. But I, as far as I'm concerned, we were going to happen. I was bad over this girl. Bad hung up on the girl. One day this dude calls the house line in Louisiana. And my mom answers it, and this dude asks her if she knows me, and she's like, yeah, I'm his mother. And then he tells her this whole story about how he's been shacking up with Sandy behind my back, and he found all Sandy and me's emails and wants to know what the hell's going on. And I get home from work, and my mom tells me all this, and I don't want to believe it. And I got mad at my mom. I don't know what the hell you're talking about. You just believe any idiot. This guy's just trying to break us up. And you know how it is. And he hung up on me. Confronted Sandy about it. She denies it. And then one night, sometime later, finally comes clean. And I was fucking devastated. Just broke my little heart in a million pieces. And mad at my mom for getting involved in it. But my mom just wasn't going to let anybody put screws to me without her knowing something. But you know what I mean? She just, I told people wild stories about me and Sandy after we split up. Just made up stories to try to justify why I was so heartbroken over this girl. But literally just, I didn't date anybody for a year or two. And when I did, I shacked up with a stripper named Victoria. So I'll tell you how bad she did me in is I shacked up with a titty dancer in Dallas, Texas. Was my next serious relationship after her that I ended up marrying. In fact, there was one point where me and Tori came down to Houston to make a go of it, and I went to work for a record company in Houston. And my mom and dad sold me that Ford Taurus so we would have a car, because all I had was my wrecker, and we had left. I had sold, got rid of that Suburban. And Tori had sold her car when we left Dallas. And my parents were getting ready to get a new car for my mom, and they sold me that old Ford Taurus. I think it had about 200,000 miles on it by then. Still, the interior, my dad had kept it, it ran great, drove great, interior good, AC blew cold. It was a decent car. Yeah, we were living in a little apartment over off Windswept, me and Tori. So we really started having a lot of our really initial big problems. In fact, Allison happened, and there was another big flood in Houston. That Ford Taurus got flooded one time, like over the hood. And literally me and Joey changed the plugs, the distributor cap, and the wires, and drained the oil and replaced the oil in it, and then drove that car. That car cranked right up and ran no problem. After being well over hood deep, we had a lot of cleaning out on the inside. Smelled like there had been a fish orgy inside that car. It was rough. A lot of cleaning out the inside of that car. But, yeah, that thing got flooded. A couple days later, it was running, driving again, no problem. They're old workhorse, man. Those cars are there for all the family stores. If you really think back your family, all the family stores, there's probably some old workhorse back there in the background just doing the work as a Ford Taurus. That's why I said there's no big stories, just these little micro stories, micro pieces of time. Worth noting that my dad, when they sold that Taurus, bought my mom, when they get her, a Jeep Grand Cherokee, which was the worst vehicle they ever owned. Like, that Jeep Grand Cherokee was such a piece of shit. I think it had 5,000 miles on it when the air conditioning compressor exploded. That thing was the worst. All the times me and my dad had worked on that Jeep, I still hate Jeep. A lot of my despisement towards those Grand Cherokees comes from that one. That and the one Rachel owned when I met her. That thing was a piece of shit too. I don't give a shit about an XJ. Yeah, in fact, when me and Tori split up the first time, was when we were living in that apartment, and that was when she called law on me after she attacked me and threw a printer at my head. And I'd like to tell you that's when I was done with her, but I was not. I was a big old moron. Month later, get to Michigan, want to go. Her parents invite me to come up to Colorado, visit, and me and her start talking about, man, we'll just make us a fresh start in Colorado. And they start looking for a place for us to live up there. And I start packing all my stuff to go to Colorado. I will say at that point, the Taurus, I was a little worried about it making the trip to Colorado. So I sold it to this old dirtbag. His name was Junior. This dirtbag record driver I worked with. He, man, weighed 400 pounds if he weighed a pound. Big old boy. Junior. Old white dude. And he lived up there kind of like close to Humble, but back in them days on the east side of 59 was a rough place to be. And east side of 59 was like black folks and poor black and white country folks. And it was just there was a bunch of shootings. There was always some shit going on over there, man. It was kind of area 10. Like, if you wasn't from there, you weren't supposed to be hanging out over there. That's where old Junior lived, man. I remember I sold him that car for $1,500, and he gave me $800 down on it. And I was supposed to be leaving in a week to go to Colorado. I see him at work, like, man, he's supposed to have the rest of that money the next day. Well, then he's Monday, he got some story about why he ain't got the money. Tuesday, he got some story about why he ain't got the money. Damn it, man. I gotta leave, man. This guy's trying to trying to hang me out on this money, and I had this friend Billy, this other record driver. And Billy was also from that part of town. Billy was just a first class MF, dude. Billy getting in a fight at the drop of a hat. Billy getting a fight because the wind blew the wrong way. Billy did not give a shit. Billy liked pugilants. Billy liked hitting things. Billy, well, you let old Junior screw you out of that money? I tell you, he's running game on you. He's running game on you, Jerry. Don't let old Junior screw you out of that money. He's running game on you. And I was like, no, man. He told me, you know, his wife lost her job. He's trying to scrape up money. He's like, bullshit. He said, that man runs a poker game at his house every Friday night. So I was supposed to leave for Colorado Saturday evening. I was supposed to catch a bus to go to Colorado. Friday at work, we're talking about this shit. He runs a poker game every Friday night. He's got your money. He's over there gambling with it. I seen Junior work that day. He'd give me a big sob story about how he's going to mail it to me in Colorado if he had to. At work, I was talking to Billy about it. Billy goes, if you leave here without getting your money, you're never going to see that money. I said, what the hell am I supposed to do, Billy? He said, well, let's go over that poker game. I said, I don't think I'm supposed to. That ain't really my part of town. He says, my part of town, let's go to that poker game, bro. We hop in Billy's truck and we go over there. Way out in the stick, man, out in the bunch of trailer houses and shit. And sure enough, there's that old Ford Taurus sitting in the driveway. We pull up over there. And they're all there under a carport. And a bunch of black dudes, white dudes, old Junior. His card table, his big ass sitting there. Got him a bottle of black velvet in a paper bag with the top rolled down. A big old Coca-Cola here. And he's laughing, cutting up. Big old pile of money right there by his hand. Don't look like he's hurting for money at all. I walk up, old Junior boy. Eyes get old. Hey, man, what y'all doing over here? What y'all doing over here? Junior kind of sounded coon-ass a little bit. What y'all doing over here? I said, well, man, you told me at work today how all this stuff was going on. Your wife wasn't working, how you didn't have my money for this car. You know I'm about to go out of town tomorrow. And Billy told me that he didn't think you was telling me the truth. Billy told me he thought you had my money. I'm looking at that table right there. It looks like there's plenty there for the money you owe me. I forgot what you still owe me. Like, he'd give me like another 200, but he owed me like 500 bucks still. No, he owed me $400 still. I do remember that. But I could easily see there's more than $400 at table, especially over there on his. Oh, yeah, man, I was going to call you. I was going to call you, man. I just got lucky. I come up a hand. I'm doing well, you know, but, you know, I got stuff going on with my kids. And like, he's like still trying to sob story me right there in front of all his friends and shit. And he was sitting in one of them metal fold out chairs. And I don't know how it was holding him, but it was holding him. And I go, Junior, you going to give me my money? And I'm like, man, that money, some of that money spoke for, you know, but I can give you like another 100. And he pulls out like 520s and thumbs off. I'll give you another 100 for down. I'll mail the rest to you, dog. Just, you give me your address in Colorado. And Billy goes, F this shit, and walks over there and kicks the leg of that folding chair he's sitting in. And that thing, I mean, it crumples like a bad check. Just rip it. Junior's ass hit the ground, rolling around like a turtle trying to get up. Billy goes, I am going to choke the ever-loving shit out of you if you don't pay this man, Junior. Furthermore, I'm going to go tell everybody at the shop about all them on-the-side toes you're doing for cash money. And I can prove it. I know everything you're doing. I'll get you fired. You get your fat ass up and pay this man. Can't stand a thief. Oh, Billy, I ain't trying to start nothing. I ain't trying to be like that, Billy. I got some shit going on, man. Billy said, I'll tell you right now, I will choke the life out of you if you don't pay that. Junior, not even the money on the table. Junior wrenches off in his pocket and pulls out a wad of $100 bills and counts off them other $300 bills and hands them to me. Everybody else at the poker table laughing. They're laughing at Junior, laughing at all this shit. But Billy's like, ah, man, let's go get us a drink. Go, that's fun. So me and Billy go. We have a couple beers. He drops me off at my place, and I go to Colorado the next day with all my La Taurus money. Thanks to Billy. I still never forget him walking up and kicking the leg of that chair out. All right. I guess we'll wrap it up. Let's do some testimonials. Yeah, and I am prepared. Look at me. Oh, Mr. Preparedness Longmire. This is the funniest thing, man, is I remember my mom when she was trying to talk me out of going to Wisconsin. Why you got to go halfway across the country? Why you got to get so far away from your mama to go figure out what it is you want to do or whatever, you know? And I wanted to yell at her that day. I wanted to tell her, because nobody can do what they want with you around because you control everybody. I had to get away from you to figure out who I'm going to be. I was thinking about that while I was working on this. That's funny. All righty, some testimonials, if you will. At our old buddy David Becker. I had a 68 Mustang and later a 86 T-Bird Turbo Coupe. That T-Bird felt like the Mustang, but man, that turbo was fast, not quick, but damn, it was fun. Man, those old T-Bird Turbo Coupes, I wouldn't mind having. I like the early 90s. Those are the ones everybody hates because they think they're ugly, but I liked them early. My buddy Keith's mom had like a 94 with a 5.0 in it, and I wouldn't mind having one of those Thunderbirds of that area, the old Super Chicken. That would be fun to run around in. At Jason B8569, the Dakota with the Magnum 360 was no joke. I had a 2000 Dakota RT single cab I bought new. I was a 19-year-old kid. And the salesman was worried I would kill myself in it, but not too worried to turn down that commission. Was it me? I enjoyed that truck for 7 years till I had to sell it for a larger car for my growing family. Yeah, those little Dakotas with that 360. The LA 360 and the Magnum 360s are some of my favorite engines out there. That's where Chrysler got it right, if you ask me. I've often thought how much fun it would be to have a CJ7 with a 360 and a 4-speed behind it. Like, that would be a fun, romping little machine. Or even, you know, I didn't get to enjoy mine, but, to have another of those early 70s cheap J10 pickups with that 360 in it. Not the AMC 360, because that thing was a piece of shit, but with a swap in a Chrysler like the LA 360 in it. That'd be a running little 750. RT was those were machines, man. At Steve D 7563, fun show. I was in Beaumont back in the late 80s, had an 84 GT and an 86 GT, both 5-speeds, the usual mods. Thinking your car was an 85 because that was the last year of carb, carburetor, my 86 had fuel injection. We actually started in cold weather versus my 84. Fun cars, but not the monster yours was. Well, no, mine was actually an 86. I think I responded to you. It was actually an 86. It was just that guy had ripped off all the EFI and just stripped off all the EFI and taking it back carburation. So mine was 86. In fact, there were still wires and stuff for the fuel injection there, but it was just set up for a carburetor. But it started in cold weather, but that we had that little carburetor dialed in pretty good on it. That was I miss that little Mustang. I've been running some 50. Hell yeah, man. All right. Whew, tired. I still got a lot of work to do today. Mm-mm-mm. Well, no big, a big reveal at the end of this one. Appreciate you guys sharing your Sunday with me, always. Looking forward to this coming weekend. I will have to get the podcast recorded early because I am going to Oklahoma, El Reno, Oklahoma. I will be at the Center Theater. It's coming Saturday, May 3rd. I'm going to be there for Burger Day. We'll go join in the festivities. We're trying to do a meet and greet with a local car club there. And we're just going to make a day. I'm taking my old buddy Will Loden, so I might have some new stories next week after riding Oklahoma and back with old William Lynn Loden Jr. And we always have a good time together, and we haven't done a gig together in a long time. So I imagine we're going to have us a little adventure. We're going to go up there and rock a theater and sales. The last time I was there was 20 people. We've already sold more than 20 tickets this time, so I feel better about going into it. Excited about the Hot Wheels stuff. And I thought about that when I was writing this episode, you know, about how controlling my mom was. And how I wanted to tell her that day, like, I got to go halfway across the country so I can figure out who I am without you telling me who I am all the time. You know, I remember these two things. I remember one time when I first started comedy and I was really just diving into comedy hardcore, and I was hanging out at their house, something country music was playing on the radio. It was that Travis Tritt song, I'm Gonna Be Somebody. This is the thing me and my mom shared. The thing me and my mom shared a lot was music. She took me one day. She bought me the Jimmy Buffett box set one day. And we were driving in that Taurus. We listened to it all the rest of the day. And she got me into Jimmy Buffett, and I still love Jimmy Buffett's music today. Most of the older stuff. But we would sing that Fruitcake song at the top of our lungs. She bought that for me at the Sam's Club. I love it. She, like, her radio station was always on 94.5 Golden Oldies, and I still love all that music, Righteous Brothers and Platters and all that stuff, and it all makes me think of her. That's the music that takes me back. Long and long, tall walking down, all that stuff. And I was thinking about that, that time she was telling, well, you gotta go halfway across the country. And I wanted to yell at her because I had to get far enough away from you that I can be my own person. Because she controlled everything. She controlled the whole family and everything. And she was the wizard. She was back there pushing buttons with a megaphone. And then I thought about how true it was, because I don't think I really matured as much as I did in the years since she passed as I did when she was alive, because then I didn't have her. I remember when I fell off that roof and just about broke everything on the left side of my body, I still needed it. I wanted my mom then, and I had to suck it up and deal with it without her. And it changed me. I just thought that was funny when I was thinking about that, like, oh, she really did have to go away for you to really get out of her grasp. Let's say I'm not talking bad of her. Of course, I miss her and I love my mother, but I would not be the man I am if she was still here, because part of me would probably still defer to her, even though we had some knockdown dragouts. Hope you guys are doing well today. Appreciate you guys tuning in. Maybe it's a good night to reflect on some of your workhorses in your past. Come in the comments and tell me about them. Tell me the workhorses that kept your family going. The Ford Taurus did it. I got nothing bad to say about Ford Taurus. Wouldn't even mind having me one of them little SHOs. Especially if you get one with that manual transmission. That'd be a fun little machine to drive. I'm rooting for you guys. I tell you that every week. I mean it. Got your back. Room at the table for all of us. I'm rooting for you. I'm JW, and I love you. Y'all be safe, and I'll see you next week. He went to Paris searching for answers. Questions that bothered him so.